Thank you very much. This morning has been wonderful already to tell the stories of the things that have happened at Oxford so far. And of course, after you've been doing projects like this for a while, your institution, your colleagues and your funders start to say, but is this sustainable? You must show that this is sustainable. And it's in that thinking about what sustainability means what I've been thinking about recently, and I know that there are ethicists and geographers in the room and a number of people from Harper Adams who may have ideas about sustainability, and so I'm hoping that actually you can perhaps help me with some of this thinking about whether there is a framework by which we can assess sustainability which might be able to be applied to initiatives like this. So learning technologists are always trying to find systems or appropriate frameworks or models to apply to evaluate the effectiveness of what we do. And sometimes those are educational ones and sometimes those are technical ones. And I wondered whether there was something about sustainability that might help us with that. So JISC is our main funder, and they use the word sustainability a lot. And I don't know whether it's just we can keep doing this with no more of your JISC money or whether there's more. And sustainable growth, of course, is different from sustaining a particular level of activity. And when I started to think about what sustainability was and trying to find literature about it, I also noticed that the Higher Education Academy recently published a report on students' attitudes and attributes to do with sustainable skills. And they discovered, they surveyed first-year students, and 80% of the respondents, the students who responded, believed that sustainability skills are important to future employers. And 63% of those respondents said they were prepared to sacrifice about £1,000 a year in salary to work for a sustainably aware company. So I was thinking about it. I wondered whether that was any of those first years were imagining themselves as early career researchers at that point, and whether that was actually people who were going to become part of our organisation, and what would sustainability skills mean to them for their employability, and also if they're prepared to sacrifice salary and they're going to come and work at universities, then that's quite good news for us, because of course universities don't pay very much. So I was thinking about universities as employers and producers of people who are sustainably aware. So those same students said that they thought the sustainability skills should be delivered through the curriculum, not as a separate module. And that reminded me of all the stuff that we've been talking about for many years about, like, transferable skills, that they should be embedded in the curriculum. But the survey also found that they're not so much embedded in the curriculum because so many academics don't really know what that could possibly mean and how that would fit with their subject, so it's difficult to teach. So from that, we know that it's important to a whole bunch of people, and it's difficult because a lot of people don't understand it. And I think if something's important and difficult, that's a good enough reason to pay a bit of attention to it, try to understand it. And also, when reports like that come out about the nature of higher education and what it's for, I always think that it's kind of, I like to try to see how that fits with what I do. How does my role in the institution fit with this information that's coming out? So thinking a bit about sustainability and the skills and attributes that would make a graduate somebody who knew about who was sustainability aware. So thinking about what a definition of sustainability was, I tried to find a few, and they tend to just kind of be around this area. It's to be maintained at this level without exhausting your current resources or damaging resources for the future. And the language is usually to do with the environment, but it doesn't particularly have to be. And in fact, the Brundtland Commission in 1987, when they were defining sustainability, didn't actually say environmental. They were talking about needs and needs of people, needs of different parts of the world, poorer countries and richer countries. But there's also a lot of literature around sustainable cities and what happens as cities grow. And I think that given that so much of what we do at Oxford, when we talk about our podcasting, we refer to a sense of place and how the podcasts reflect the nature of the university and how it's very situated university. And I wondered whether if this is important to be about a sense of place, then kind of sustainable urban area might be the kind of theory to be looking at. And if you start to look into sustainable urbanism, you get into those the language of sort of social responsibility, and so you get the sort of Patrick Geddes folk work and place type framework to think about. And then, of course, people, planet, and profit, which is what Shell came up with for their definitions of sustainability. And as an organization, a university would be expected, I think, to be looking at triple bottom line these days. So it's not just about the business and the economic, it's also about the social and the environmental impact of our university. So as you'll be aware, this is Fair Trade Week, World Fair Trade Week, and I'm talking later this evening at a fair trade event, and so I've been trying to think about what kind of the aspects of ethical consumption and how we behave in the university and what academic practice is and how that fits with ideas of sort of sustainability. And of course it works on many levels for us when we think about OER, because as well as creating resources, we also have human resources, and whether you can continue a service with the same level of human resource and whether this is a limited flow of resource or not, and whether you are, what you are doing with regard to the future, whether you're making material available and resources for the future, but also that you have to look after that resource and protect it for the future so that it continues to be available. So you get into issues of sort of archiving and looking after and what the maintenance of that resource that is being created and being made available. So looking at the literature that I've found, it tends to be economic, environmental, and equity seem to be the kind of categories that are coming out with regard to sustainability quite a lot. But then there's also a lot of literature about behaviour change and buy-in to sustainable practices and the thinking about the way that you work sustainably. And I think that sort of emotional or educational or the thinking about your behaviour must kind of be where the sustainability skills that the HEA are talking about is. It's kind of something about an attitude towards being aware of how your practice fits with economic, environmental, and equitable issues. So there's also, of course, all of those issues about the sort of price and technical barriers that we have, and the barriers to entry to university. So thinking about sustaining our activity in a place, whether that's an edgeless university like an edgeless city or whether that's a specific place, and thinking about how the different aspects of our business all work together, can we look at our open educational projects, our OER projects, using this kind of framework and see how we're doing under each of those things? And would we be able to assess whether something was sustainable if we weren't checking on each of these categories? So economic, obviously, that's been touched on a little bit already by by some of our speakers talking about their relationship with publishers, but also about relationship with student fees and how we're intending to sustain education as a business model. The environment, obviously, is about the place in which we work, but also issues of green IT and the extent to which technology helps us to reduce waste, not reproduce unnecessary things, but manage to do that in an environmentally aware way. Equity, in terms of, obviously, access to the materials, and the emotion, which, of course, is the commitment, or as we would usually say in sort of learning technology projects or academic development projects, it would usually be about, we would call that academic buy-in. Are people up for it? Do they want to continue the area of activity? And this is, I thought these seemed to me quite helpful in that this is a kind of framework that would fit with a lot of what the Learning Technologies Group does. We have to think about all of these things if an initiative is going to be successful, because you need it to be linked into all of those different aspects of your business. So there's with the fact that it's Fair Trade Week, and I'm sure that you're all familiar with the Cape Town Declaration of 2007, which was this sort of inspirational value position about how educators all over the world should release material to make the world a better place and contribute educational resources open and freely. And I'm not going to sort of rehearse that because I know that all the people who are involved with open educational resources in the room are probably familiar with that. But it, again, the language around that talks about it being a fertile ground. It talks about areas of growth, sustaining, and being resource rich. And so actually the language around that Cape Town Declaration has lots of sort of environmental lines that go through it, which I think is quite interesting, because it's an inspiring to action and trying to get people to sign up. At Oxford, obviously, and Emma referred earlier to taxpayer resources being available. It's for us at Oxford, it's been about persuading academic colleagues to release their materials, their resources on the web through open licenses, as you know. But that's the start, but that's the start position. But what would the sustainable position be on that? And that sort of moves us on to what is the next step. When you've got a lot of people doing this, how do you then make sure that that continues, but that you do it in a way that doesn't, that those resources are protected for the future and doesn't use up your current resource indefinitely? So the next step after getting people to release their material is partly to look after it and to make sure that it will be equally available in the future. Partly to make sure that people can find it, because, of course, there's no point in having the material unless it's out there. So our emphasis is shifting to the making it discoverable and thinking about how we keep it and use it in different formats and in different ways to increase its value, the value of those assets, and thinking a lot about what it is that we have as our resource. But also thinking about how you might persuade, or how you might, you know, whether this is something that will continue to grow, whether you are talking about sustainable support for an increasing area of work, or whether we should be going to a sort of no growth scenario to maintain a level of activity. If, you know, from learning technology projects, we sometimes find that there's a technology adoption cycle that you might be familiar with, a technology adoption curve, where you have initial enthusiasts who will go with you because it sounds like a great idea and they're prepared to do it, whether it's a success or not. But then you start to get into sort of whether you can get a larger majority of people to use it, and what kind of information persuades those people, what kind of evidence persuades those people is of interest. So now that we're starting to gather evidence of impact and case studies of the things, and it, you know, the theory says that if you have evidence that it's a good thing to do and a proof of what happens when you do it, that will persuade a whole new group of people, who are those people who hang back until there's been evidence. And if that happened, if we made a huge leap in more people getting involved, would we be able to sustain that level of activity? So obviously in central computing, we're always being asked to say about how our services are sustainable. And at Oxford, of course, that you have to be able to keep things in perpetuity, and that's a really, really long time at Oxford. So, obviously, this is what we were doing, but it's also about promoting the use of open source technology. It's also about promoting open ways of working, and that's what you're going to talk about more before lunch, so sustaining open ways of working and open ways of developing. So just to sort of run through that framework again, the economic, actually it has been mentioned several times this morning, but and thinking about the, you know, how this fits with our business, the business of the university, what business models are there for, you know, why would a university do open educational resources, how can we afford to do that, and whether the environment, the economic environment changes, you know, with these changes in fees, can we afford to keep doing this because of that issue about the value of our resources and whether these are things that, whereas we thought as part of our academic practice we wanted to give those away in a generous position, whether that in fact puts any threat or affects the relationship that we have with the, our students who have paid so much to come and be with us. Or whether we feel that there is, that as our, in our role as academics, we have a responsibility to redistribute resources to places where there is less. And if we do have those feelings, that's a sort of ethical position about teaching. And that might be one of those sustainability skills that that survey from the HEA is talking about, that if we view our practice in a way that makes us think about the distribution of resources and value for money, does that mean that we're, you know, what kind of decisions do we make as we consider ourselves as in an economic model? So the environmental, I think, when I talk about environmental, people tend to think I'm going to talk about green IT, and so I was wondering about whether open educational resources are essentially sort of carbon neutral in that we're using the internet and all of the infrastructure and all of the IT that already exists. I don't think that this activity makes more of an environmental impact. But it certainly stops some element of being wasteful in the, you know, digital formats allow us to produce less in terms of paper. But environmental, of course, doesn't have to mean green. It can just be about the context in which you work. But some of the language that particularly goes with the environmental initiatives, I think, fit very well. So there's the folk work and place stuff, again. But also the idea that a lot of the initiatives around sustainable cities or transition towns is about buy-in, and it's about very local activity and working with your neighbours and seeing the impact of how your behaviour fits with other people's behaviour and whether that persuades you to behave differently. So there's a number of the projects that are going on at Oxford have that very local feel. So because of the nature of the institution, the nature of the place, all of the podcasting activity and the gathering of this material is very local because of the devolved institution. And things like the Triton project, which put the material very much within the subject community, that's a, you know, locally based initiative. So you can kind of imagine describing that in the same way as some of the environmental, you know, sort of within your community, taking responsibility type aspects, and the fact that it's going to be passed on to the subjects, the departments to nurture and maintain and look after afterwards. That has a very local feel to it. And also working with your neighbours, of course, the Ripple project with our partners at Brooks and Harper Adams is about making sure that your neighbours are buying into some of this same activity that you are. So we have these OER projects that seem very local, that cascade ideas. We also have a project at Oxford called Open to Change, which is about thinking about how the kinds of data and information that people have about what other people are doing persuades you to make decisions about your own practice. And that's particularly in an environmental way, but it's the same kind of projects to do with IT and thinking about how information persuades people to change. So we have Open Spires and our podcast service, which is very locally based. And I think that there's something about taking patterns, seeing patterns and reproducing those, which make it a very sustainable way of working. We also have, of course, our projects like Runcoco, which is on a very similar model, which is about helping your neighbours or taking a model and reproducing it, but also about getting new groups of people involved in an activity that would have seemed very resource intensive, digital collections, and sort of spreading the load, but also involving a lot more people in a kind of mass movement. And projects to encourage reuse, so recycling and aspects of that, obviously we know about OER and what that means to recycle learning materials, but that anything that kind of promotes reuse and the commitment to creative commons, I think, is very important in that way. And of course, as Pat's touched on, we always choose where we can open source technologies such as WordPress, and of course we also have at Oxford Sakai, which is so thinking about how we sustain the software that we use. So in terms of sort of open practices within a technology group, those are the kinds of decisions that we make about the projects that we do and the software that we choose. In terms of equity, obviously access to materials and making it discoverable and putting it in the right place means that more people can find it. But I think that the Creative Commons, the decision to go with Creative Commons, means that that material can be made available to so many different people, but also in a way that allows it to be translated into different languages, so that it can go off and have its own life in different areas. So it sort of allows it to be more sustainable because people have equal access to what can be done with it, and how it can change in the future. So to a certain extent, choosing that license allows it to be more sustainable, I think. So in terms of how it is protected for the future, the way that we can keep and store and possibly reformat and change and host in lots of different places to keep it safe. So protecting your resources for the future, I think, is a big part of choosing that license. It also, of course, has that coolness about the brand, and choosing to use the Creative Commons license, I think, has made it possible for us to help our colleagues to recognize that we see what they do when they produce this material, when they produce their teaching, as a creative act. And the recognition of the production of teaching materials as a creative act, I think, is a big part of what helps us with that kind of emotional buy-in, and what it is that people are doing. In order for something to be sustainable, we need to be sure that people will want to continue to do it in their own work. And both Emma and Peter referred to, I was doing this kind of stuff anyway, and it is an extra work for me to be able to do this. But there's a definitely emotional buy-in to the idea that this is what I'm about, and how my academic practice fits with that. Whether we would ever get to a point where we were seeing academics choose to perhaps give as part of standard academic practice, that you perhaps almost tithe 10% of your material away as Creative Commons each year, or whether how that changes our relationship with the publishers and what we're doing, I think will be quite interesting to see. But the sheer numbers of people who've bought into the idea at Oxford is very heartening. And we've seen today the kind of materials that have been produced. In terms of sustaining this area of activity, I'll be very interested to hear from you as we go through the day how you think that all those different aspects of sort of economic and environmental equity and emotion fit together, and whether that's a useful framework at all for you. But I thought it was worth just looking a bit further than the idea that it's hosted on a server and we'll just keep doing it. I thought there was more to sustainability than that. So I'd be, I'm sort of trying this idea out for Fair Trade Week, but I'd be interested to hear ideas about whether you think those are useful categories to think about sustainability. So thank you.